This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Lynn, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. You're tuned into Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm joined in the studio by
Jeff Sandu
and
Christine Wong.
It is, of course, Tech Thursday, meaning Tech Maestro Jeff Sandu will be regaling us with some of the stories over the last few days. In particular, starting off with something quite relevant from last night, in fact.
Yeah.
What is it?
Do bigger things.
Do bigger things. Yes. Well, I like the start of this already.
Yeah, so it's doing bigger things with the Samsung Galaxy Note 8.
Okay.
And initially everyone, so I went for the event, not in New York, unfortunately.
I wish
I was there in New York, but Samsung Malaysia had like an internal launch for just to show the media friends that we have here. And, you know, I went to the event. It's nearby my place. It started at 10 p.m. because, you know, they're launching in New York.
So like a simulcast kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm. So I decided to, you know what, let's do this. It's 10 o'clock at night. Let's go out and go for an event. And it was just fascinating to, at the beginning, they were trying to keep it a secret in terms of what they're going to call it. Because of what happened with the Note 7,
right?
Everyone knew, and then everyone's made, you know, thousands of jokes and puns about it, right?
And I'm really trying not to, and I promise I won't.
It's a bit too old now, like, it just feels like we know how far they've leap forward. It's not like they're still stuck in that limbo. So they were still trying to keep the name tight-lipped and like, you know, the new Galaxy phone will be launching soon. You go like, we know it's going to be called the Note 8. And they ain't going to ditch the name itself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There were fears that because of the tarnished reputation that Note 7 had and, you know, its exploding device, they may completely drop the Note name itself. But they didn't. They stuck with it. And the reason why they stuck with it is because they started off the presentation by just thanking the supporters of people who bought the Note 7 phones. And some of them actually were so adamant in keeping the phone despite Samsung actually asking them, like, you have to return the
phone.
Give it back. But, you know, I was surprised that there were actually a lot of people in the US who were refusing to give the phone back for various different reasons. And I guess because the phone
they
really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But Samsung, you know, had that whole, you know, tragic incident with the Note 7 and they acknowledged it, which is something that, you know, kudos to them because they have leaped forward by, you know, creating a standardized battery procedure for the next generations of phone.
Yeah.
We saw it with the S8 and what they've done it. So the Note 8, there's nothing much to say in terms of like, yeah, this is another one of those high-end premium phones in terms of specs. That is everything that you would need on a phone. It is dual lens. Everyone was shouting about, oh, the S8 is only, you know, coming with a single lens camera. You know, it's backdated. No, it's not. Now the Note 8 has dual lens and it's also the world's first dual OIS, which is an optical image stabilization on the phone. So comparing with Samsung was very clear in terms who their competitor is by showing side-by-side comparison with the iPhone 7 Plus.
And what was the kind of
Of course, you know, you would see the differences because, you know, technologically, the iPhone 7 Plus is a year old and it only has one optical image stabilization instead of two optical image stabilization. So the Note 8 is the world's first phone with dual OIS. And that will just enable you to shoot even more better videos.
Right.
And the reason why we talk a bit about videos is there isn't much we could do in terms of photos. We have reached to that stage where every single premium phone is going to take good pictures. There's just no differentiation besides your eyes telling you that is better and I'm saying, that is better. It's just a personal preference.
Right,
now,
and we've almost got to that stage where photos are going to be so good that you can't really improve on them that much
more. You're going to be nitpicking.
Right.
You're going to be telling, it's like, oh, you know what, Rich? My HDR has a better level or has a more wider range. Or
Jeff,
has
my greens are more green than yours.
Yeah, you go
listen,
like,
as long as I can continue to take selfies, I'm fine.
Right. That's exactly it at the end of the day, right? So the Note 8 is back in a very welcoming way because Samsung were the pioneers of phablets. In 2011, you know, everyone laughed at them when they decided to do the Note 1. And everyone's like, why would you need a phablet, right? It's and 2-3 years, they were being mocked about. No one's going to do a big phone. No one's going to do... Look at our phones now.
Right.
It's huge, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, literally.
Yeah. And the Note 8 is... It's the first time ever it's a 6.2 inches screen, which is huge, but a 6.3 inches screen with a quad HD display. So screen-wise, is fantastic. But what makes this really, really nice is Samsung's design and its style that it has. It follows very closely to the S8 Plus, which is, I think, about 6.2 inches screen. But the size and the fitting of it, it has hardly any bezel on the phone.
Right.
So it's a 6.3 inch screen on like a 6.3 plus plus inch body. So you're holding literally a pure screen itself. It comes with like, you know, 6 gigs of RAM. Like again, specs wise, it's all great, right?
It's what you want.
It's what you want. What I really liked about the event is how Samsung has decided to incorporate the stage into what they try to portray of what the phone is. Unboxing your phone.
I mean, you showed me a clip earlier on today.
Oh, my God.
I mean, just to kind of... I don't think you saw it, Christine, but no. What they've done is... to describe the stage, it was a square stage, like a box almost. So the back two walls and the floor of the stage all act like one giant screen. And yet you've got these images that looked flat and yet 3D at the same time. It was incredible.
Yeah, I did see one picture of like the founder of Samsung or something standing on the stage, but it looked like he was standing on a phone.
Like he was floating.
The mobile president of
Samsung.
There we
go.
Yeah. So DJ Corp came up and did the whole presentation and announced, you know, and now we have the new Note 8. And Samsung, they used to follow rival brands in terms of launching a new phone, right? Apple kind of started this whole trend of when you want to launch a new phone, you do a whole big keynote presentation and they market it really well.
We would be up at 2 and 3 in the morning to watch
Steve Jobs, you know, doing a presentation of the new iPhone or the new iPod, right? Yeah. And obviously other brands, not just Samsung, other brands, you know, soon followed as well. But what Samsung did with this, especially the Note 8 event, is try to incorporate a stage that could tell what their message is across. And they did that by that screen that you mentioned. Mm. And the fluidity of having three screens on, you know, three different angles. One is a vertical screen that is facing to the right-hand side of the crowd. One, it is a left vertical screen that's facing to the left-hand side of the crowd. And one is the stage itself, which is a screen. And when the presentation is going on and when they're clicking onto the slides of showing how the camera is now effective, and instead of just moving the images away from screen, the images are flowing downwards to the floor itself, to the screen. As a presenter, and you know, me and you, Richard, we've been on stages for, you know, Enterprise Breakaway is coming up soon, and you know, we dream of being on those kind of stage to do a presentation. Mm. I was just really blown away by the sheer fact of how seamless that screen was, and that is exactly how the Note 8 feels. So at the end of the event, they had a surprise for us here in Malaysia who did not go to the UK, to the US. They actually had test units that they brought out.
Right.
Now, no photos and videos were allowed, of course, because these were test units. But I did have a play with the phone for about 10 seconds.
Nice. That's a full 10 more seconds than anyone else in this room.
Exactly.
So that's good.
So that is why I can talk about it, because I have 10 seconds of experience with the Note 8.
All right, what did your 10 seconds tell you?
Slightly heavier than the S8 Plus.
Sorry. The whole 10 seconds and you can't... Wow, you're brilliant.
Slightly heavier than the S8 Plus, which is the phone that I'm using now. It's not as curvy as you would think. The S8. Looking at the S8 and the S8 Plus, you go like, wow, the curved screen and the design of it. The Note 8 has a slightly boxier feel, a more squarish feel, a rectangular feel. And the reason why they did this, which they didn't mention, I think the reason why they did this is to just really have a clear separation of a business professional phone and a consumer phone.
Right.
Because, to be honest with you, there hasn't been a phone since BlackBerry of like looking real business professional. The Note 8 with its stylus, and if you see some of the images and how squarish it looks, it's a really nice, it's a very pretty looking business phone. So if you're a business person, you want to have a stylus that you could do crazy things with it. For example, you would wonder, why would I want to use a stylus for? The stylus has this feature where you are able to take down notes even when your screen is off. And you could take down up to 100 pages, and you can actually edit those notes, and you could, you know, you could remove those notes. You could continue writing up to 100 pages while your screen is still locked. You don't have to unlock your phone to take down notes.
Okay,
that feature itself go like, cool, but why would I need it? I tell you why. One example is if you park your car in a car park lot. You take out your phone, you take out your stylus, you write down what bay did you park, and you keep your phone in the pocket.
Yeah.
That screen shows you where your car, you know, your block number. Instead of taking a photo that you then have to delete because, you know, it takes up space, you just write a note. That kind of feature, that simplicity, enables you to do a lot more other things. It's only when you use the phone long enough, you will notice, oh, I can actually use this for that. Oh, I could do this for that. The other thing that they put into the software side is that because of its large screen, you could do multitasking. So instead of you separating one window for YouTube, one window for this, you have to manually do it with the S8 Plus. They've made it quicker where it's just a single tap of a button and immediately two apps will be launched side by side and you can run both apps.
Side
by side. No lag at all, of course, because, you know, again, this is like, you know, this phone is as highly advanced as any spaceship rocket that's being launched, right? Because seriously, though, like all smartphones these days are crazy. I think the Mars rover was like running on a 34 kilobytes processor. Yeah, so this thing's obviously way more faster than that. Dual camera, so better photos, better videos, you can take notes. Great phone. Pre-orders are going to start soon in Malaysia. You can, hold on, let me just open it up. So yeah, pre-orders starts on the 5th of September till the 10th of September, which is 5th of September, is just a few weeks.
A
week away from now. You have to go onto the Samsung website to register your interest. At this point of time, nothing yet, just a teaser. But yeah, make sure 5th of September. Pricing-wise, we have no idea yet. This is the most expensive Samsung phone in the US. It's nearly $1,000 US, unlocked without any carriers and all that. So you are looking at maybe about 3,999 ringgit, which is about maybe 300 ringgit more than the S8 Plus, which is still all right. It's still way it's below the 4,000 ringgit mark. Anything above 4,000 may be too steep for a lot of people, but I think Samsung is going to get this at the 3,999 ringgit mark. I have a feeling this is what they're going to go. Love the phone, can't wait for it to arrive here. My 10 seconds of experience, I managed to squeeze out a 10-minute conversation out of it.
That was really good, though. You should probably post a link to the video of the launch as well. That was really
good. My God, that screen. Oh.
Definitely check out the video. We'll post that a little bit later on the page. Meanwhile, we've got some music coming up. And, of course, this band were featured, in fact, on the launch of the S8 tablet yesterday.
Yes. I loved it.
It is, of course, The Black Keys. This is Lonely Boy here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ballsy football moves. BFM. 89.9.
Surprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Jasandu
and
Christine Wong.
So we just had a brief discussion about Samsung.
Samsung Note 8.
And you were saying it's a phablet size. It's quite large and one thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we've gone from discussing things that are larger in terms of telecommunication. Well, I'm going to be talking a little bit about things getting smaller.
Ah.
So one of the big problems we have is, and the reason that some mobile phones, in fact, the reason mobile phones are of a certain size is that the antenna that's inside has to be of a certain size to be able to receive radio frequencies, right, and pick up on one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
So they have now developed some chips that communicate via radio waves, and they are a tenth to a hundredth the length of the current state-of-the-art compact antennas.
Of current antenna. Yeah.
So at only a couple of 100 micrometers across.
Wow.
These are comparable to the thickness of a piece of paper.
Hmm.
So the next-gen antennas, they're going to relay the same types of signals as those used by TVs, cell phones, radios, all this kind of stuff. It's a big advance, and it could pave the way to create wearable, even injectable electronics. So So this kind of thing has been stalled for decades because if you don't already know, a traditional antenna picks up signals when electromagnetic waves moving through the air wash over it, and it causes the antenna's electrons to flow through it in an electric current. So that current then creates an electric voltage essentially a readout of whatever message those electromagnetic waves carried, right? But the longer the wavelength is, the longer an antenna must be to generate a voltage big enough to convey the message clearly.
Okay, right? All right.
So a conventional antenna needs to be at least one-tenth the length of the magnetic waves it's picking up. For example, cell phones tuned in to 11 to 15 centimeter long radio waves have to contain antennas at least, you know, a few centimeters to get a good kind of result. Mm-hmm. But in this new study, they've overcome that problem by fashioning antennas that use a different method to translate signals. So when electromagnetic waves pass over these chips, the waves activate atoms in a layer of magnetic material, similar to the way that if you imagine it like you're doing the wave at a concert, it's like that.
Okay. Oh, so it triggers.
It triggers, so it goes backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards.
Ah, right.
So they've built these tiny antennas that can communicate at the radio frequencies used by GPS, Wi-Fi, FM, and even broadcast TV. So we are talking about devices and phones, perhaps, that are as big as a ring on your finger.
Yeah, I guess that is the future, right? When you have technologies like this, antennas that are so tiny, you could do, you know, smartphone that is basically a ring that you wear on your finger. Right.
You also mentioned injectable technology, and I'm just thinking the science fiction future that we all thought was going to happen with us having chips implanted in our heads.
So gonna happen.
Injections are the way to go.
Yeah. If you imagine it like a kind of a lab on a chip, you can have this inside of a patient that can actively monitor them and relay information to their physicians in real time. You know, we've got friends, we've got relatives who are having to be monitored, you know, all through the day and through the evening, and they have to carry a device around them. That device has to be charged. You have to make sure it's close enough. But if you're actually wearing one of these things, or you've got one of these things inside you, you've got nothing to worry about.
You know, there's also that, well, when you're injecting something or you're implanting something on someone, especially on, you know, things that will send a message out of your body using some weird frequency, I'm sure it does some sort of things to your body because we run on a certain frequency as well, right? Our body's got, you know, that aura or whatever people would want to say it, but we have that certain energy that we ourselves carry. So I guess for them and for scientists who've been trying this for a very long time, it's all about getting the right fit for human beings, because we're all so unique that you can't have that one device that runs on that one frequency and implant it on everyone. We could be, you know, we can implant things now already. We have, you know, medicines where you just take a pill and before you fall sick, it will trigger something and then it will, you know, release some sort of chemicals into your body so you will never fall sick. These kind of things exist. The reason why you don't see them in the market is because we're all so unique. And if they do a study on 10 human beings, that's 10 different results they're going to get. There's no similarities. Right, it's just different. I mean, it's really hard.
We've spoken about, you know, wearable tech for so long. And we know that part of the problems behind wearable tech is two issues, you know, battery size and battery life and stuff like, you know, signals or, and one thing or another.
Yeah.
We're almost at that stage now where batteries are becoming much, much smaller.
Smaller,
and, you know, if you've solved this antenna problem, you know, Christine.
Yes.
Wearable tech and injectable tech now.
I mean, like needles, so I would have to go for the former. No, but in all seriousness, I think this is really interesting just because I don't think any of us imagined, you know, 5 years ago that there could be technology that was small enough to inject or even wear.
Right.
Like, you know, already the fact that we even have smartphones, which are like basically multiple gadgets that are already squished into one gadget.
Yeah,
and now you can have that gadget squished into a smaller gadget that gets injected into your system. That's crazy.
Right.
Well, the other thing, besides injecting, the MIT researchers, I think me and Matt, we spoke about this a few months ago in June or July. MIT researchers have done tattoos that basically act as a medical tracker.
Yes, we talked about it on Biz Bytes as well.
Yeah, so, you know, these kind of things exist. It's just what way Are we going to, you know, do this? How are we going to be cyborgs? Is it through implants? Is it through injections? Is it through tattoos? Or, you know, what's going to happen? Not sure, but we're all going to be cyborgs.
Hold on to the seat of your pants, because a little bit later on, I have got a story about this thing called CRISPR. Have you heard about CRISPR?
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've probably heard about it. We'll cover it in the story when we come back in just
a few
minutes.
We will explain more.
Yes. In the meantime, we've got some music coming up. And when we do, Christine will be telling us all about flying food.
Oh, yes.
But not quite what you think. All right, in the meantime, we've got some Black Rebel Motorcycle Club with Whatever Happened to Rock and Roll here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Jeff Sandu
and
Christine Wong.
So we've had Samsung, we've had antennas. What are we having now, Christine?
We have flying food.
Okay.
Okay. What I mean by that is
flying
not,
food.
It's not. Unfortunately, it's not that the food.
Are we too
itself,
hungry? That we-
okay. So it's not. It's not that the food itself is flying. What it is that the actual headline of the article that I found is flying food comes to Iceland with a fully operational drone delivery system.
Okay.
That's what it
right.
is.
Now, drones.
You're stepping into Arvin territory with like drone delivery and
audio clickbait is what I just did.
Yes.
And I apologize, but point being. So basically, Iceland might seem like a kind of random location for a really early adoption of this kind of technology, but the reason is just because Iceland's regulators were the first to approve this kind of project. Mm. What it is the drone technology company Flytrex just teamed up with AHA, or AHA, I guess, which is basically Iceland's version of Foodpanda.
Ah. Right.
And so this is taking place in Reykjavik, and you simply place your order for food, and soon one of Flytrex flying drones will drop it off at your house or office. Very simple. But the interesting thing is that Flytrex does not make the drones. Instead, it's spent the past few years filling in all of the gaps of the problem. So it worked with local regulators like the Icelandic Transport Authority and trained employees and built a cloud-based network that the entire drone delivery system runs on. So they don't make the drones, but they've put everything else in place for the drone delivery system to work. Yarif Bash, the CEO of Flytrex, has said that the Icelandic Civil Aviation Authority understands that drone delivery is no longer a pipe dream, but a logistical system that has far-ranging benefits to both businesses and consumers. And Reykjavik, in particular, is actually a really good test city for this kind of technology because the coastal landscape is actually very difficult to navigate by car. So now that drones can just fly over rivers and stuff, that's really nice. Yeah. The service is currently a test run for Flytrex, which wants to use drones to make it possible for mom and pop shops to compete with like Amazon when it comes to 1 hour delivery. And Reykjavik is just the first stop for both Flytrex and AHA. I'm going to keep saying AHA. I don't know if that's actually right.
I like the way you keep saying AHA and Reykjavik. You know, carry on doing that. Yeah. Fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Icelandic in nature.
So after a trial period, Flytrex and AHA hope to start delivering packages along multiple routes and directly to consumers' backyards in Iceland and soon the rest of the world. But there's a catch, as there always is with most early drone delivery trial runs. There's only one delivery route right now. and the drone itself doesn't actually do the whole thing. It's only part of the equation.
Okay.
So that's kind of awkward. What Flytrex and AHA are doing, they're using a hexacopter. It says here it's a modified DJI Matrix 600. And that delivers food or other products directly across a bay of the North Atlantic Ocean that delivery drivers normally have to skirt around. But then the delivery person will take it
the rest
from
of the
there.
Way. Mm. Oh, well, that's a,
which is
it's a pretty cool.
Yeah. So cool, but the drone doesn't do the whole journey
right
yet.
I mean, we talked a story about in China. China were doing a delivery service as well on their kind of version of Amazon.
Yeah, we're forgetting Singapore is actually Singapore testing out a few drone delivery services.
Meanwhile,
as well.
we're telling people you can't take your drones outside right now. You know?
Well, the SEA Games is happening now, so you know, you
which is an ideal time, in my opinion, an ideal time to be filming and photographing things.
So the problem I have with drones delivering items is not that my items may get stolen and all kind of thing. They are thieving problems. Right,
okay.
But the problem I have is that drones are loud.
Yes, they
are. Can you imagine if, like, so if BFM, when we have, you know, lunchtime and we all order our food, and each drone can only probably carry like 2 persons' meals, right? Because that's weight that it needs to consider as well. Imagine you get like 10 drones coming in, that's going to sound like an army. They're just walking in. You know, like,
that's your biggest issue?
Well,
no, this is the thing,
sound
right?
pollution is a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, fly trucks had to even modify the matrix with a cargo compartment in the first place. The drone can only carry packages up to 3 kilograms in weight for up to about 6 miles. So it's not even
a lot.
It's pretty good.
That's a decent
but
range.
It can only maybe carry like a box of sushi or some hamburgers or something. Yeah. And it's good for what it's meant to do. But I agree. Like in a, I don't know if that's different because we work in a more crowded environment, and I guess Reykjavik is less crowded.
I think drones is a step. One step that we need to take and notice that, you know, there are so many problems with this drone technology, but we need something to push the industry further. Mm. And what I see the future will happen is things like the Hyperloop system, where you will have tubes within office buildings that is connected to, you know, central servers where your postal office, our postal address, for example, right?
They used to do that, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. So
air pressure.
Yeah. So that old technology that we used to see back then, the air pressure system, that will come back. But in order for that to come back, we have to take these drone routes and stuff and to just sort of realize what are the thieving problems that we need to solve in order to help systems like the Hyperloop to come in with an execution plan, go like, bang, here you go, like 90% success rate. Because drones, if you start off now, like, it's a service. As long as you have an investor who's willing to buy your idea, you could operate now itself. You could start, Foodpanda could do it immediately. Dah Makan, for example, right? We've had them on Takeaway. They talk about, you know, how they're using AI and, you know, even drones as well. The reason why they're not doing it is because they know the success rate here for drones delivery is very, very, very small because of so many problems.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing about Flytrax specifically. Bash thinks that the advantage that Flytrax has over the competition is that instead of just selling the drones themselves, it's trying to sell the whole solution. It's trying to sell this full stack solution. So if you're a commercial operation that wants to get into drone delivery, it wants to be able to provide the drones, and the cloud system, and the software, and the training, and the maintenance, and also be able to help, you know, to get approval from regulators to try and be able to maintain this whole system as a whole, which I think is really good. I think that's one of the big problems that I think, you know, is affecting the fact that, because the thing is, right, they're calling it the world's first fully operational autonomous drone delivery system, but that's not exactly true.
That's,
Because Amazon's already done
Amazon,
a few commercial
drone
deliveries
right?
in the UK. A company called Flirty has also completed a few dozen in the US for 7-Eleven as well, and it's not even fully autonomous, so okay. But
clickbaity.
At the very least, I like the fact that they're not just selling the drones themselves, and they're trying to figure out what are all the problems with a drone delivery system and how can they solve them and then sell that solution.
All right. Okay, we've got to take a very short break, folks. We've got some music coming up first from the Stereophonics into the Stripes. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're speaking about CRISPR. Just a little talk set there. If you've got anything to say, get us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And of course, we are on Twitter at BFM Radio. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up for the afternoon. I've got Jeff Sandu in the studio with me, and of course I have Christine Wong over here as well. Final story of today. It's not so much of a story. It's about a book that you might want to check out. It's called The Cracking Creation, Gene Editing and the Unthinkable Power to Control Evolution.
Right? Gene editing.
So you may have heard on the grapevine, if you listen to any podcast, Radio Lab or anything like that, they've mentioned this thing. It's called CRISPR.
Yeah.
So CRISPR is what it works is. It's a family of DNA sequences in bacteria that contain snippets of DNA from viruses that have attacked the bacteria. And what they do, it basically, it can modify genomes. So if you look at it, it's a little piece of DNA, like a bit of bacteria. It goes across a gene and it removes certain parts. And then it can replace certain parts.
Oh.
You can edit genes on the fly, pretty much.
Wow.
It's kind of scary. It allows people to play God should they want to do it. The question is, should we do it? So there's a little piece that I've taken from this snippet, because it's done by this woman called Jennifer Doudna, and she was one of the co-inventors of the idea behind CRISPR. And I read this briefly to Christine earlier on, where she talks about how tomatoes that can sit in a pantry, slowly ripening for months without rotting, plants that can be better weather, can better weather climate change, mosquitoes that are unable to transmit malaria, ultra-muscular dogs that make fearsome partners for police and soldiers, cows that no longer grow horns, right? These all sound very far-fetched, but are also things that already exist because of CRISPR. But then she goes on to talk about things like woolly mammoths, winged lizards, and unicorns, right?
Yes.
Unicorns.
I'm so excited.
These are things that can be created.
Can be created,
using
yes, yeah.
CRISPR. So this is a book that you should check out. But yeah, the question is, should we be doing stuff
unicorns?
Like this?
Yes. If it can result in unicorns, the answer is yes. Okay? There's no argument. There's no question. We did cover them trying to resurrect woolly mammoths a while ago.
Let
as
me
well.
Just say same this. Thing, yes. You know, if we're going to bring unicorn, which is an amazing, beautiful thing, we can also create a very dark unicorn.
Exactly. Right? Right? So,
yeah. So, not all unicorns are pretty and
this is
lovely.
True. They don't all poop.
They
litter.
May haunt your dreams, Christine.
Yeah. Jeff,
they may haunt
Jeff,
your dreams.
Please don't ruin my pipe dream, okay?
Okay.
But yes, do me a favor. If you get the chance, head out, get this book. It is called A Cracking Creation, Gene Editing and the Unthinkable Power to Control Evolution.
Blow your mind.
If you're interested in that kind of stuff, highly recommend it. Okay, mm-hmm. We're going to clear up with what we have covered today. We started off, of course, with
the Samsung Galaxy Note 8 launch and how amazing the screen was. The screen for the presentation.
Yes.
The phone is, you know, the phone is great. Like, we haven't got the phone yet. I had 10 seconds of the phone. So, yeah, I'm just blown away.
You
by
did a whole 10 minutes, though, with that 10 seconds. Pretty good, though.
Yeah. Yes, thought, yeah. Excellent.
We then spoke about how Jeff was speaking about how the phone is getting bigger. I spoke about how antennas are getting smaller. Christine then had?
I then had how food are now being delivered via drones in Iceland.
We did. And then, we just mentioned CRISPR.
CRISPR.
Check that out. It's time for us to wrap up. Before we do, of course, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. It was Shahrudin Said, the executive director of the Malaysian Association of Hotel Owners, or mm-hmm. MAHO. Mm-hmm. So Malaysia will be rolling out a new tourism tax effective the 1st of September 2017. I'm saying nothing more about that. But after a series of rollbacks following heavy criticism from various parties, the Malaysian Association of Hotel Owners, MAHO, disagrees with the tax. We ask them about their views on the charges levied on tourists and its impact that it may have on the local tourism industry.
Mm-hmm.
If you missed any part of this show, head over to the website, download the podcast, or get it from the app.
And also, just one more thing I would like to squeeze in at 1:30. MDEC and I have a show with MDEC and I'm interviewing Dr. Tendayaki Vicky and he's an amazing guy, wrote two books already about the lean startup. Tune into that show because it will blow your mind if you're trying to figure a way into your digital transformation journey.
So, sounds yeah. wonderful. There was something else you wanted to mention as well earlier on, Jeff.
Oh, yes. So on the October 9th till October 13th, Malaysia will be having its fourth cyber sale 2017. So expect a whole bunch of items to be on some mega sale. iPay88 will be the leading gateway provider in Asia. It's one of the leading online payments provider in Asia. They will be the premium payment gateway partner for the My Cyber Sale. So if you're going out this weekend to, you know, do shopping and stuff, save your money. Save your money. Spend right. it on the 9th of October.
Okay.
Online.
We have to move off now then, Jafe.
Jafe.
Yeah, I've given you a new name, Jafe.
Right.
I kind of like it.
Jafe.
Clearly, I need a break. Oh, yeah. I'm going to be away for a few days. I will right. see you guys in a few days' time.
Yeah.
But, of course, these guys will be back same time, same place tomorrow inside the studio here at BFM 89.9. In the meantime, it's a bit of Audio Slave with Original Fire. You have been listening to BizBytes on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.